Hi, I skinned a woman's tattoo off, and I'm Allison.
And I'm a teen Paul Bunyan. I'm Evan.
And we are Cheryl's Bitches. This episode, man.
This episode is a little unhinged.
This episode, I guess I just like don't remember season two well at all, because I was like, I don't remember all this happened, but I thought it was way later, so I'm like, what is coming next? I have no idea.
I remembered two of the events that occurred in this episode, and I thought they both happened much later in the season and not in the same episode, so.
I thought the Jughead thing straight up happened like next season. I did not think that was season two.
Yeah, I didn't really remember when that happened. I just remembered that it happened, and I thought it was closer to the end of season two, because it's kind of like it has season finale energy.
Yeah. This whole episode had season finale energy, so.
I haven't looked, but I'm guessing it was the mid-season break, like the episode
before mid-season. Yeah, I think so, because it's a Christmas episode. This is chapter 22, Silent Night, Deadly Night. Like, okay, clever, question mark? It's no.
Not That's not
But it is the Christmas episode, so we see, like, the intro shot is Jughead giving this, like, frankly incomprehensible voiceover about like the Feast of Fools, and there used to be like trickery on Christmas, and like I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but it's over, like Pops that's all decorated for Christmas, and Archie and Fred are there selling Christmas trees out of like the parking lot.
Yeah, this raised a question in my mind of the timeline of these events. Because I fully thought it was the spring, like two episodes ago, and apparently it wasn't even Christmas yet, so.
Yeah, because I remember we thought that the, like, season one was, like, beginning of school year till basically Christmas.
Yeah.
And then we thought, and I feel like it should be a direct, like, when was summer? I'm so confused. I don't know what's happening. Well, and then we said
two episodes ago was the drag race. Where they're all out in, like, super, like, they're all in, like, full summer attire for that.
Yeah, well, that was three episodes ago, and two episodes ago, we're like, this is a Halloween episode. So I'm like, Halloween and Christmas are more than 2 weeks apart, so I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. Maybe what I could see is that was a Halloween episode, and then this, like, episode aired in, like, November, and they had all of December, like, off.
Like, then I had. There was a Thanksgiving episode in season one, right?
Was there? I guess we could look this stuff up. Okay, it doesn't really matter. But it doesn't matter. It aired when it aired. And yeah, so the first scene is basically that. And Archie mentions that they were going to visit Molly Ringwald, but she's on a singles cruise instead, which I'm like, okay, Archie's mom, like, you're not gonna see her again on Christmas?
No.
Like, Jesus. they couldn't get Molly Ringwald for this episode, clearly. And
they really couldn't.
Kevin is doing a Secret Santa. Huh.
That apparently no one wants to do. Anyways, then Holly wakes up Betty and is like, he's here. And Betty's like, what? So she goes downstairs, and like the whole family is opening present, and there's someone in like a Santa costume bent over the tree, and he stands up and reveals it's the Black Hood, and she looks over and everyone is dead, and then he's like coming at her, and oh, it's a dream.
Of course. Like, yeah. So Betty is spooked by the Black Hood, I guess. Then we see Cheryl, we get a nice Cheryl update that their struggle is now they have no money because like Clifford is dead, and I guess all of his money was not coming from the great maple syrup industry, so they kind of have no money for Christmas. Her mom says it's a hard candy Christmas. And must say, Cheryl is absolutely slaying as usual. She's wearing like a black long sleeve shirt that has, like, I call them the witch's sleeves. Like, I don't know what they're actually called, but, like, the really wide sleeves, and like a red skirt and this black belt that has like red, green, and gold, like little bells or buttons on it.
I also noted Penelope's outfit, not because it was a sleigh, really, but she was wearing a really ugly color of orange sweater, but then the like a black lacy neck piece that like kind of made it a turtleneck, and I thought the neck piece was cool. The sweater itself was an ugly color, though, just like so gross looking. So not a sleigh, but something I noticed. Anyways, then Fred is reading a letter, and Archie's like, oh my god, is that from the Black Hood? Which is so funny.
Any piece of paper? He's like, is that a letter for the Black Hood?
And Fred is like, no, it's not. It's a hospital bill. It's the last one, and it just came. And Archie's like, oh, how much is it? And it's apparently $86,000. Which Archie's like, whoa, that's a lot of money. Shouldn't your insurance be paying for that? And Fred says, yeah, it must be a mistake, but clearly doesn't think it's a mistake.
Yeah. Then we're at Veronica's, and she got all these fancy gifts for everyone, including her parents. And she's still going to give Archie his Christmas present that she had ordered before they broke up.
Yeah. She says that they're still friends, to which Betty responds, isn't everyone?
Okay, Betty.
But then Jughead talks to FP about Penny. And FP's like, this isn't your problem. Stay out of it. I'm handling it. Just shut the fuck up. You ruined everything, essentially, energy. And then Tallboy shows up with a suspicious duffel bag, and Jughead thinks that they're running drugs for Penny now.
Thus, they decide to do Secret Santa at school, I guess.
Obviously, in the school lounge where everything happens.
The student lounge. We see Josie got Veronica a couples massage, and she says, you can go with Betty or your mom. And Reggie says, or I could go with your mom. Which, like, I have to admit, that was pretty good, Reggie.
That was good. Reggie did a good one. It was a good joke.
And Archie had Betty and gave her this book from their childhood that they used to, like, read and listen to the audio part together, which was very cute. Oh, my gosh. And also Moose is back. So he finally, I guess, got out of the hospital. Which, again, like, what is this timeline? Because didn't that happen at the beginning of the school year? And he's just out of the hospital now?
That's why it happened at the beginning of the season. And he's just now out of the hospital. I have questions. I'm confused. How is he going to make up all of this work? Anyways, then also I wanted to know that Betty knows it's Archie because it's wrapped terribly. And she tells everyone. So she's like, yeah, it's wrapped like shit. It's obviously from Archie.
You know what? And she was right.
She was right, but it was just very funny to me. Then Archie, like, flees, and Betty's like, where are you running off to? And Archie says that he can't see Moose without thinking of the Black Hood and all of the pain that he's caused everyone, and Betty says that she understands, and she's also feeling paranoid about the Black Hood still being out there. And then Betty notices that there's a new janitor in school, and they're like, this is sus. So they go to talk to the new guy, and he says he's filling in for Mr. Svensson since he's been out for a few days. But Betty is like, suspicious that he goes missing as soon as Archie and Veronica confront him about his suspicious past and connections to the Black Hood. So Archie's afraid that they led the Black Hood to Mr. Svensson and got Mr. Svensson killed because they revealed his secret or whatever. Which, okay, the whole time I was wondering, does the school literally have one janitor?
Yes. Apparently, because they know him so well.
Benson better be making bank.
Must be. They go to, like, the school secretary to ask if she'd seen Mr. Svensson, and she said that he's, like, been calling off of work and that she swung by to give him soup, which I'm like, wow, she's such a nice lady. Like, your coworker's sick and you decide to, like, literally make them soup. But she didn't actually see him when she dropped it off. And she's not like she's worried but not really that concerned, because she says that he gets depressed over the holidays because he doesn't have a family.
Yeah. True. Then Betty goes and talks to Jughead at the Blue and Gold, and Jughead gives her his gift, and she just kind of throws it aside and is like clearly annoyed. And then Jughead is like, I'm sorry, I broke up with you to protect you. The serpents are going through a lot right now. And she says that wasn't his decision to make. And he's like, yeah, I'm sorry. And then she gives him her gift, which is giant. The big ass box.
Yeah. And Veronica then gives her gift to Archie. You'll see these clear parallels between they both broke up last episode and they both got everyone got each other a gift. So Veronica gives her gift to Archie, which is like this very nice watch that's like engraved that she loves her Archiekins, XO Veronica, which I'm like, girl, even if you were still together, who would want that on a watch? But she says that she doesn't want it to be awkward and does actually want to be friends. And Archie is like kind of distracted because he's worrying about his dad, and that like tells her about the money problems that they're having. Yeah, so he feels kind of awkward taking this very expensive watch when they have better uses for that money.
Yeah. Also, I would like to know, I don't often compliment men's fashion in this show because it's usually kind of bad, but Archie's wearing a red, like a bright red cable knit sweater this whole scene, and it looks really nice. It looks like a nice sweater, and I appreciated that.
I noted that late in a later scene, but the same sweater.
Then Jughead gets to the white worm, and there's a bunch of presents laid out on a table, and he's like, what's this? And Tony and Fangs explain that it's a serpent tradition to give back to the South Side during the holidays, and they do Meals on Wheels and Toys for Tots and help out like kids and elderly people during the holidays. And then Fangs makes a comment that the Hell's Angels do a similar thing to be like, don't worry, it doesn't ruin our cool gang cred.
Worried about the important stuff, clearly.
It was very funny to me. I was like,
I also thought it was the Riverdale writers being like, see, gangs do good stuff.
No, it's like funny because it's like setting up the serpents as like a community help activism organization for like the poor side of town.
Yeah.
It's helping bridge that transition in their branding.
Yeah. Which is relevant to the episode. Yes. So yeah, they're at the White Worm, and Jughead, FP comes in, and they have to do something for Penny, and Jughead wants to come and help and be involved, and FP is still like, no, stay out of this. Which is him this whole episode.
Yeah. And then I noticed Tallboy was like, but we do need another person. So then FP takes Sweet Pea instead, which is honestly kind of messed up. Like, he's like, I don't want Jughead involved because this is dangerous. Like, he got us into this giant mess. I just don't need him involved in this. It's running drugs. Like, it's illegal. He could get caught, get a lot of trouble. So let me take this other random kid instead.
It's not Sweet Pea. He's not a legacy serpent. Well, maybe he is. I don't know.
Who knows?
We don't know about Sweet Pea. And then at Pops, I said Archie looks hot cutting trees in that red sweater.
Yeah.
Betty calls him because she can't stop thinking about Mr. Svensson and wants to go check on him, and Cheryl shows up and says that she wants the nicest tree that they have.
She says, Teen Paul Bunyan, I'd like to purchase your finest tree. I wrote it down. Cheryl's fit here also slayed. It's like red mini-ish skirt and a bright red like matching blazer over a t-shirt that is white and has two like giant cherries on it. It was cute. Anyways, then Betty and Archie go to check on Svensson at his house. They knock, no answer. It's kind of creepy. It's very short.
Yeah. And then the parole officer, FP's parole officer, shows up at Jughead's trailer, and he's like, can I come in? And Jughead's like, I have a choice. So he goes in, and Jughead is, of course, worried because he might find some drugs.
Yeah. Then the Lodges are having a family dinner, and Veronica is noticeably a little annoyed. Hermione asks if she saw a Spiffany's bag this morning and says it's the perfect size for a Glamourge egg.
That's a double fake Riverdale breakers. What?
In one sentence. It was beautiful. Veronica is very annoyed. She goes on a rant about how they're buying bejeweled eggs instead of helping the needy. And Hermione says, Veronica, when did you become a communist?
I love this because honestly, this is so Veronica. Like, she is like always buying this fancy stuff. And then she like talks to a poor person, because she did this last season with Jughead when she like found out Jughead was homeless and was like, oh my God, there's homeless people. It's like, you literally only care when it's like the most recent thing you've heard.
Also, I love that she like grew up in New York and presumably like would walk on the street where there was lots of homeless people out and about. And she didn't realize that unhoused people needed help until Jughead existed in her space.
Oh, she is messy. And of course, Hiram is like, well, Fred Andrews just needs to tighten his belt a little bit. We are done with the Lodge Industries charitable donations for the year. And I'm like, yeah, big spender Fred Andrews needs to pack it in so he can afford his medical bills. Not great.
Anyways, V is still mad, and Hiram storms off because he's mad that Veronica's mad. Anyways, then Cheryl is decorating the tree, and Penelope comes in and is noticeably very angry. From this, we find out that Cheryl's middle name is Marjorie, which I thought was funny. Cheryl says that she saved Christmas and Anna Rose is so happy, and Penelope's like, okay, that's great, but how are we going to pay for this? We have no money. And so Cheryl says she's going to have to ask Mr. Lodge for a job, but she'll have to be creative since her only skill is being a terrible mother.
She ate her up. To which then she like kind of storms out, and Nana Rose says, you should have drowned them at birth like a basket of kittens. I'm like, what the fuck did Jason do? Like, come on, Cheryl, Nana Rose was so happy that Cheryl saved Christmas because she was bummed out that they weren't having Christmas either. So she immediately turns on Cheryl. And two, Jason that was literally murdered, and you're going to go say that they should have drowned him as a child?
Listen, much like Cheryl, Nana Rose exists simply to be an agent of chaos.
That is so true. That.
You gotta respect it.
That is so true. So then Betty is at home and she's like all sussed out and nervous still, but Alice is home and says that her secret Santa left a gift for Betty and she put it in her bedroom, which you gotta say is at least slightly out of character for our dearest Alice to just be like, oh, let me just put this gift in Betty's room and not snoop and open it. Like, come on.
I guess, but there's also been other, anytime the Black Hood leaves Betty a package, Alice is just like, there's a package for you. She doesn't snoop. Anyways, remember the suspiciously marked package that just wrote Betty or the Coopers or whatever on it in black Sharpie, and Alice is like, there's a package for you.
No, Betty did that to Alice.
Oh, Betty did that to Alice.
Betty was like, there was an envelope. It's like with the mail.
Oh yeah, you're right. Cut that out. I that didn't happen. That
remark. Big man.
Anyways, I do think it's like slightly excused by the fact that Alice is clearly having a tough time with the holidays, because when she gets home, she says she's icing gingerbread cookies that she made because they're Polly's favorite, just in case Polly comes home for the holidays. So like, very sad. Alice is definitely having a tough time this Christmas. Anyways, then Betty goes upstairs and opens her secret Santa gift, and oh, it's a finger.
Okay. It's like, of course it's a finger. You know, it's like, it's it's so messed up that it becomes obvious once again, because it's like, okay, this is obvious. The unmarked package, it's obviously from the Black Hood. He got her a gift. What would it be? A human finger.
Human finger. That, where else would he go with that? Yeah, Archie comes over and reads a note that was apparently left with the finger saying that it's Mr. Svensson's, and that the Black, they can save Svensson from the Black Hood by exposing the like primal secret of the town. Primal sin of the town. And so they immediately embark on a mission to figure out what the heck he's talking about.
Yeah, and they realize that Archie remembers that before he was like adopted as Joseph Svensson, he was Joseph Conway, still at the Sisters of Quiet Mercy. So that is where they're going to go to hopefully get some additional info.
Yep. Veronica breaks into Daddy's study, and she immediately finds the Glamourge egg. But then under the Glamourge egg is the deed to Pops. And so she found out that her parents own Pops and lied to her about that. Also during the snooping, her crime outfit slayed. It's a like short navy bluish dress with a very deep V and pearls.
Yes, and it had like this thin sparkly belt. Mm-hmm. She was slaying. I also love Hiram's office, how there's that huge picture of that huge portrait. It's like a painting of Veronica that just hangs above his desk. And every time I see it, I'm like, that's just cool. Then we quickly see in the Jughead's trailer, FP gets there and he says that the parole officer stopped by and was kind of sussed out by these big duffel bags. But Jughead didn't open them, and then FP does open it, and he's like, gift boxes. There's just like a bunch of wrapped presents in there, and he's like, gift boxes with drugs in them. And FP says, no, with gifts in them. I want to know what Jughead thought was happening there. Like,
I like how he's like so aggressive.
He's being Veronica in this episode, just being like, you're giving children gifts of drugs.
He's just assuming FP is doing the worst at all moments in this episode. Anyways, FP explains that he wants the presents for the whole family, and he wants to go to Toledo and give them to Jack's mom and Jelly Bean in person. And Jughead's like, cool, but we still need to figure out what's going on with Penny. What's your plan there? And FP is like, how do you not understand that there's literally nothing we can do? You've like fucked shit up too much. We have no leverage. We just have to do whatever she tells us to do for now. Like, there's not anything that we can do. FP's like, finally, just like, I can't deal with this anymore, and yells at him.
Which, yeah. Kind of, you see where he's coming from, of like, there is no leverage, and he doesn't want Jughead to be in trouble so much that he will like implicate all the other serpents and potentially go back to jail himself, like knowing the parole officer was here. Like, he's willing to do that all for Jughead, and Jughead just wants to help because he obviously feels very guilty about it all.
Yeah, it's just sad.
It's sad. We see Veronica at home laying on her bed, and she's calling the hospital to settle Fred's medical bills using Hermione's credit card. And she wants to do it anonymously, which I'm like, unaffected. Have we learned anything about anonymous buyers, anonymous donations? This has never worked. Just this episode, she found out that the anonymous, whatever, savior of Pops was Hyrum. Like, this never works, but anyway, she still does it anonymously.
She knew that they like had, she thought they donated it to Pops, but she found out they actually bought it. So, like, she knew all along they paid for it.
True. But I guess she is her father's daughter, so she's like, what should I do? What should I do? Anonymous secret. So yeah, she settles Fred's medical debt.
Yeah. I would like to note that she paid for it with Hermione's Black American Excess card. Also, we find out that Hermione's middle name is Apollina or something like that.
I wrote that down too. I was like, okay, question mark.
Like, it's not actually important. It was just very funny to me. Anyways, then Jughead has a meeting with the teen serpents, and he rants to them about the Penny situation. And he's like, we need to take Penny out. That's the only way we can save the serpents. And Sweet Pea's like, but she's helped some of us. And Jughead has always been like, but what for what cost? Like, she always asks for favors in return. And then Tony stands up and is like, what's the first law of being a serpent? No serpent stands alone. So they all agree to take out Penny. But this raised the question in my mind of like, Penny's also a serpent.
We deserve more Penny backstory lore, because, you know, we might find out some like minor details that I'm forgetting, but like, I know we don't find out her whole like origin story or anything, because she says that like the serpents put her through college, all of this stuff. Like, who was she before? Like, is she like a serpent by blood? Like, we need to know the story, because I don't understand why she has so much power to manipulate all the serpents. It feels like they could have just all turned against her like earlier, if she's this bad and has like used all of them.
Yeah, that's what I want to know. That's what I want to know.
But I agree, because their whole like argument is, you got to stick with my dad because he's a serpent. She is also a serpent, and she uses that argument later too, and they just don't care.
They just don't care. I guess because FP is the serpentist serpent.
He trumps all the other serpents, I guess.
Yes, I don't know.
Tony is wearing her hair in like these two little pigtails in the back of her head, and she's like, it used to be like kind of darker purple, but now it's like light pink color, so her hair looks good.
Yeah. Then Archie and Betty talk to the sisters, and they're talking to Sister Woodhouse, who seems to be the head sister, maybe. She says that Joseph was a troubled youth, and then tries to like end the convo real fast after another sister walks by and gives her like a menacing look. But then Betty pulls the Polly card and is like, I know your secrets, and I'll spill if you don't tell me more information.
Which, two things I love about this. One, this is Betty's move literally always. Any situation, she's like, well, I know this, and I'm gonna tell. Like, just to get more information out of people. And then also, with what you're describing of, like, she said, like, one sentence, and then the other sister comes up and like looks at her and she's like, I've already said too much. I'm like, all you said was his first name. Like, you didn't say anything.
You said is his first name and that he was troubled, which I think anyone could tell after his family was murdered. Like, that's just to be expected. He's probably going to be a little troubled. He witnessed his entire family get murdered.
Yeah. So she tells the whole story that kind of corroborates what Svensson said himself, that he identified the killer, and that this kind of mob came together to execute him. And what we did not know before that was that Joseph had some questions that perhaps he identified the wrong man, which is definitely possible. Like, and he felt a lot of guilt about it, I guess, like as a child, like at the sisters. And it's like, yeah, because they killed him like the next day. They immediately found the killer and then killed the killer. And it's like, this kid had just saw his whole family get murdered. How could he like correctly identify a guy? Like, it seems very likely that this did happen.
Yeah. Anyways, then they want to find out more information about the group who killed them, which I was sitting there and I was like, this would not have been my first question, but I guess, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a bad investigative journalist.
Like, what would you ask?
I don't know. I just remember being like, this feels kind of random to be like, okay, so then who killed the man? I'd probably be like, more about like, okay, what was like, who was his adoptive family? Like more about him himself, you know?
No, that's a fair point. Because I feel like they still don't know what the sin is. Like, did he actually falsely accuse the wrong person? Or like, is the sin him falsely identifying the person? Or is it the mob choosing to kill a person? Because that could also just be the sin of like, okay, you can't just be a vigilante and kill a random dude.
Something tells me the Black Hood wouldn't care about that one, but...
True. Because that's what he does.
Again, makes me think that maybe he's not so pressed about the murder, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, but so they, Sister Woodhouse says that the group came, but she doesn't remember any of them other than that it was a group of men with one woman, and she doesn't know the woman's name, but she remembers that the woman had white hair except for one streak of cherry red hair, and they're both just like, now Rose!
Which I love the premise that that was just Nana Rose's like either chosen hairstyle slash natural hair color, even as a child, that she had white hair as a teenager. I'm confused
about the age here, because Svensson was like a little bit older, but not like excessively old. And so
I think it was a group of like young adult, like maybe like 20 somethings that killed. So she was probably in her 20s and he was a child. So they could still be like 20 years apart.
I can see that. I can see that. But then it's like, how did all of this information just like lose the cultural conscience of this town?
Yeah, because like, they knew all the other lore about the history of the maple industry and all of that, but we forgot about this casual murder.
You got this murder, this like vigilante group that like apparently everyone's family was, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. It confused me. The timeline is confusing because I fully thought Svensson was like in his 40s. So this would have happened like what, 30 years ago?
Yeah, I feel like, I feel like he was a bit older than that.
Maybe.
But I don't know. Anyway, then we cut to Jughead's plan that he shows up to where Penny is like waiting for FP to help her like move some drugs, and he shows up and she says, nice crowbar, and he's like, yeah, I thought I might have to break in, and she's completely unfazed by that, and they walk in, whatever, and then all the other young serpents show up with masks on and grab her.
Yeah. Then Hermione and Hiram get home and confront Veronica about the using Hermione's credit card to pay for Fred's medical bills. And they're angry, but then she's like, but you said you only donated to Pops and you actually bought it. So I don't see how money is an issue if we can afford to buy Pops. And I was like, that was never their argument.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, like, we don't want to do it. Not like we can't afford to do it. Anyways, Hiram is pissed, but and Hiram's constantly like, no, Veronica's like, you don't tell me anything. Like, there's so many secrets. I thought I was supposed to be in on this. And Hiram's like, yeah, there's a lot you don't know, but that's like for your own good. You don't want to know everything. And then Hermione's like, no, she deserves to know. But that means you can't be daddy's little girl anymore.
This is one of those moments that I'm like, Hermione, like, seek help. Like, why are you so jealous of, like, your daughter's relationship with your husband? Like, it's a little like, okay, queen.
It was very funny to me. Anyways, then Hiram agrees to tell Veronica the truth, which I think this is, like, the third time they've agreed to tell Veronica the truth. And he's like, okay, let's go to the study and have a conversation.
Like, okay, I don't believe you, but okay. Then we see Penny is like basically kidnapped, and she's like, where am I? She's in Greendale, and Jughead says that this is her new home, or she can go anywhere other than Riverdale, because she's like kicked out, like it's serpent territory, you can't go there anymore. And she's like, you're a stupid cocky kid, which kind of fair. Yeah. And she's like, he's like, well, you better stay away. And she says that serpent law says you can't hurt one of your own, to which Jughead basically says, I don't give a shit, and straight up skins, she has her serpent tattoo like on her like forearm, and he skins it off with a knife, and he's like, that tattoo doesn't make you a serpent, and just cuts it off. I'm like, I guess.
You know, it be like
it really do be like that. I honestly, I actually respect Jughead a lot in this episode, which might seem bad, but like, he's usually so like, I don't know, just like the plans he comes up with are not like, I'm trying to think the way to say this. He's very much like thinking of things and being like, should we do this? Should we do this? And like trying to get his dad or Archie or whoever to agree to like enact his plan. This time he, you know, he took the action into his own hands and he got it done.
He had a plan and he executed it without other support. And, you know, respect. That's what a leader does, I guess. Anyways, then Betty and Archie arrive at not Thornhill, wherever house Cheryl's living at now. I forget what the name of it is. Top of my head. And they're like, we need to talk to Nana Rose.
Thistle House. I just remembered it.
Thistle House. Thank you. At Thistle House. And so they start asking Nana Rose about the murder. And she was like, oh no, I wasn't there. Girls weren't allowed. They told me to stay home while they took care of the bad man.
Which I'm like, we do not get an explanation of what the fuck was happening or like who the other people were.
Nah. Anyways, Betty's like, so where did you hang the bad man? Again, another question that I feel like would not have been my next question.
Well, no. That is a good next question, because the Black Hood said you have to go to the place where the original sin was.
Oh.
Which is hanging the wrong man. So they should go there.
I thought he was just like expose it. But maybe, yeah.
No, because he said that Svensson was there. Like that's where they could save him.
Ooh. Okay. You're right. Never mind. Anyway, so then she asks where they hung the bad man, and Nana Rose is like, oh no, they didn't hang him. They gave him a proper burial and they buried him alive. And she says, Polly, talk to your grandfather. He was there.
I loved this continuation of Nana Rose thinking that this is Polly, because you know what? I hope she lives in a world where she truly believes that like Polly had her great-great-grandkids, and is like just living her best life, going on these adventures. Like she's like friends with Polly.
I love that for her. Anyway, so then she tells Betty and Archie that she, quote, had a picture of them smiling at the place standing under the devil's hands.
I love how they're just like, yeah, she just talks like that. Like,
yeah.
Who knows? And what's third Cheryl outfit, but this needs to be shouted out as well. She's wearing this bright red skirt and this like white top that has a fuzzy black collar that has these like big spider brooches on either side of the collar. She's slaying.
Icon. Anyways, then Betty asks about the picture, but Nana Rose is like, no, I'm tired, take me to my room, Cheryl. And Cheryl's like, get the out of here, you awful people. Which,
okay. She can handle a couple more questions. Like, I know Cheryl doesn't have, like, the full context, and we know why Nana Rose might not want to, like, answer all their questions and, like, possibly implicate herself, but, like, Cheryl is so just aggressive to them, and I'm like, I feel like, does she, is she that protective of Nana Rose? I guess.
Yes. I feel like Nana Rose is her, like, mother figure, because Penelope's, as Cheryl says, a terrible mother.
True. So then Betty's basically freaking out. They go back to the car, and Betty's freaking out because her grandfather, like, killed an innocent man in cold blood and, like, whatever. And Archie's like, let's end this tonight. We're gonna, like, go home tonight, and it'll all be over. And he's like, we can do this, but I need you with me. I need Betty Cooper with me. And then they kiss in the car. Archie for life. I definitely forgot this happened. Like,
I also forgot this happened, but I did say, let's go Archie Shippers.
Archie Shippers. And I love that they drive away and Cheryl is just watching from the window.
Menacing. Anyways, then Veronica, Hermione, and Hiram, like, finish up their talk. And Hiram, like, gives her a glass of scotch or something, which just felt whatever. Veronica's like, okay, I've heard you out. I'm in, but I have a ground rule. I'm just not going to do anything illegal. And Hermione says, that's fine, because we're not doing anything illegal. Let me share two words to live by. Plausible deniability.
She's kind of an
icon for that one.
She is an icon for that one. But it does kind of add to our point that, is this really the whole truth? Like,
almost certainly not. Veronica's kind of stupid for thinking that it was. Anyways, then Veronica says that she also requires that Fred's medical pill payment still go through from them. And Hermione's against it, but Hermione, in her usual way, sweeps in and is just like, no, we can do it. We'll figure it out. We'll make it work. Because Hermione's honestly smarter than Hiram. Let's be honest here.
Did you take this as a little bit? And I felt this earlier in the episode, like, she was a little more sympathetic about Fred's situation because, like, she was with Fred last season, and obviously Hiram hates him and, like, doesn't want to help him in any context because, like, yeah.
Yeah.
He did sleep with his wife, so, like.
Yeah, so I think it's a combo thing of just, like, generally Hermione's, like, a little bit less of an awful person than Hiram. B, Hermione, like, actually cares about Fred, whereas Hiram hates Fred.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, there's a mix there. Anyways, then Hermione's, like, Fred's, like, Hiram is, like, we can't do that. It'll be too complicated. And Hermione's, like, no, we'll make it work. And then Hiram goes, okay, we'll make it work. Do we have a deal? And Veronica says, we do, Daddykins. We have a deal. Which... I think this might be the first Daddykins, which is creepy to me because she calls Archie Archiekins, and, like, that's a weird mixing. I don't like it.
And it's so, they really put Archiekins on that watch that she gave him for Christmas, only for her to call him Daddykins. No.
Oh, no. I don't like it. I don't like it a lot. Anyways, so,
after that nice creepiness, we're back at the trailer, and Jughead brought home a celebratory dinner from Pops, and I'm like, is this really celebratory? You guys eat Pops every single day. You have no other food. Anyway, and there's
the only restaurant in town. The Dairy Queen closed.
And we ain't never seen them cook. Like, there's no way they're cooking in that trailer.
Literally every meal is from Pops.
Anyway, they're celebrating because he says that Penny is gone and they don't have to worry about that anymore. And FP's like, no, you idiot. Like, she'll be back and she'll be mad. Like, what did you do? And he's like, no, she won't. Like, we got rid of her for real. And, like, doesn't just explain the whole thing. She's just like, no, like, it's legit this time, trust me. And then his whole premise is that in unity there is strength, and since all the younger serpents, like, rose up against her, that she won't be able to, like, come back to power, which I don't, maybe, but, like, she's definitely weakened right now, but I feel like she could come back eventually, and she still has the tape of you delivering drugs, so, like,
that they don't think about. I want to hear your take on what Fred's thought on, or Fred, FP's thoughts on this were, because I kind of took it as him just being like, I'm over it and I don't want to talk about this anymore, so I'll just move on.
Like at the end, how the conversation ended?
Yeah, that's how the conversation ended for me, from FP, of him just being like, okay, whatever.
Well, it is kind of like, what could you do? Like, if Jughead already did all this, like, it's not like FP's gonna go back and apologize. Like, that wouldn't be very, like, strong-willed. So, like, I think he is just like, that's probably not great, but at this point, what can I do? And I feel like Jughead does have a point. Like, if he was able to rally all the younger serpents to, like, rise up with him, clearly, like, he has some power and influence that, like, maybe FP kind of needs. I don't know. He's just done.
Then Betty and Archie are looking through photos. They find the photo that Nana Rose was referencing. They find out it's in Pickens Park, and under like a tree with weird limbs going off. So that's what she meant by the devil's hands, apparently. And they think Svensson might be buried there. So they are like, let's run out there, go find him. We can call Keller on the way. And so they get there. There's like a fake tombstone planted in the ground with as says his name, and then just Sinner running down it, which I found really funny.
This whole scene is the definition of camp. Like,
it's so camp. Anyways, they start digging up the coffin. They find it. They open it. It's empty. Then, as they're like trying to figure out what the fuck is going on, the Black Hood shows up with a gun and is like, Archie, get in the coffin. In the coffin, or I shoot her. And so he does.
He climbs up in that coffin and he's like, makes Betty close it. And then he's like, okay, start shoveling dirt on top of it. So she's like shoveling dirt on top of Archie. And of course, Archie's in there like, to every like spitting out dirt. I'm like, dude, let's put your hands over your face. Like,
let's preserve a pocket of air. Let's figure this out.
Step one, King. But Archie does no such thing. And Betty, of course, is trying to like talk to the Black Hood, like try to like, I don't know, outsmart him in some way. And she's like, you shouldn't do this, because like we did figure it out. Like, where is Svensson? Like, he doesn't need to die. Archie doesn't need to die. And luckily, they actually did call Sheriff Keller, because then they hear police sirens like coming up to the park. So Black Hood is distracted, and Betty takes the shovel and just smacks him on the face, and he collapses to the ground.
The thud effect, the sound effect they put in, is one of the funniest sounds.
I was so confused, because of course this is one of those Riverdale scenes where it's like, it takes place in the dark, so you can like barely see anything that's happening. And I was so confused, because I thought she hit him and then just immediately like opened the coffin for Archie, which she did, but she hit him and then the Black Hood ran away and she did it. I thought she was fully like just opening it, even though the Black Hood was right there. I'm like, Queen, grab the gun first.
No, I was thinking the same thing. I thought he was just like on the ground, like disoriented, maybe passed out, whatever, because he just got blunt force trauma to the head.
Wait, I'm like, the correct move is not to just open Archie, like run yourself, like get out of there.
I was like, Archie can figure this out later, he's fine.
But anyway, he'll the Black Hood had run away, so then yeah, she opens the thing for to free Archie. Archie grabs the gun that the Black Hood left right there, and they chase him.
Apparently the Black Hood is also bad at his job and left the gun behind.
Yeah, what was the plan? Like, wasn't it in it? Well, I guess he got hit, so he was holding it.
And hit, so I guess he could have dropped it, but then, like, if you're gonna run, grab the gun.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe he didn't know where the police were, like, I don't know. So, they go and chase him, and they get to like this bridge that actually the bridge that Archie threw his gun off of like a bunch of episodes ago. And the Black Hood is like climbing up there, like he's gonna like just jump, or like, was this escape plan or suicide attempt? I don't really understand.
He maybe both. He was fine with both, potentially. I don't know.
And Archie is fun because he's like, you shot my father, you're terrorizing my friends. I'm like, what's up with this fucking monologue, Archie? Like, so out of pocket. Like, he was almost buried alive. Wouldn't you be in shock? Like, there's no way you have time, you have like the mental capacity to monologue the Black Hood in this moment.
He does. It's the reverse version of the like villain monologue of explaining his motivations. It's just Archie's doing it, and he's like, these are why my motivations are good and why I'm gonna kill you. But before he climbs down, there's a shot that rings out, the Black Hood is hit, he falls onto the bridge. There's confusion for a second, and then it pans over and sees smoke rising from Keller's gun. So Sheriff Keller arrived. He shot the Black Hood. They take like the hood off of the Black Hood and reveal it's Mr. Svensson, and his finger is missing.
Which one? Great Sheriff Keller moment, because he looks so badass. I was like, okay.
Really hot dads of Riverdale to the rescue. We haven't gotten that.
Yes, hot dads of the Riverdale to the rescue. Yeah, so it's Mr. Svensson, and like they're just basically like, what the fuck? Like they're like, they just sit, they kind of sit, Archie and Betty hug, and they're like, okay, guess that's over.
Okay, yes. Yeah. Anyways, then the gang debriefs at Pops, all of them together. So it's Archie, Veronica, Betty, and Jughead. Archie says he feels bad. Because he could have like caught Svensson the first time when they cornered him at the school. And then Betty explains, but they're all like, why did he do this and cut off his own finger? And Betty explains that he cut off, quote, the finger of accusation, which, okay, biblical queen, like that has strong biblical energy. Anyways, and then she theorizes that he was the Black Hood. Because he murdered and like got an innocent man murdered for his family's murders, and so he wanted to like pay the town back by being a vigilante or something. And Veronica says that I guess it makes sense, and they still like going through all of his motivations for all of the killings and how he like could have known this information. And then Jughead says, guys, this is starting to sound like that weird scene, last scene in Psycho. Which, of course, Jughead came in with a movie reference. Of course he did. Of course he did.
That was actually a pretty good one.
Plus. Anyways, then Jughead, like, starts speaking. And he's like, wait, have nothing to say. And I said, yas, Jughead, for once you're not talking.
Yeah. He was like, here's what you need to understand. And then he's like, I don't...
there's nothing. I got nothing.
He ends with that, well, he, Mr. Svensson, is in a body bag and we aren't. Which, like, objectively true.
Fair enough.
Then we get the kind of closing montage that starts with Josie and Kevin singing outside of Pops. And I'm like, what is this? Why is Kevin singing?
Well, because the Josie doesn't have the Pussycats anymore, so she needs new guest vocalists, apparently.
Oh, of course. We see Cheryl coming downstairs.
They're singing God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. I need everyone to know that, because it's, like, a fun moment where, like, it's a song that's from, like, the 50s. So it has, like, that 50s Christmas feel. So depending on how, like, you play it, it can sound kind of creepy. And that becomes important later.
And it does sound kind of creepy. Cheryl comes downstairs on Christmas, and she walks past a Santa hat on the ground, and she's like, no, what's this? Picks it up, and she's like, Santa? And no, it's Penelope. and a random guy with lipstick all over both of those faces because Penelope has found a new occupation.
Know that yet. We just see them. But I thought this was season three. I fully thought that this occupation began in season three. I'm not gonna lie.
I definitely knew. I wasn't exactly sure, but at the beginning of this episode when Cheryl was like, get a job, I'm like, I know how this episode
is. It was coming when she said that. But when she, like, I was like, wait, does that start now? I thought that was like later.
She definitely levels up.
She definitely does level up later.
This is just level one.
Anyways, this then cuts to Veronica finding a gift under a tree and being like, ooh, who's this from? And her parents are like, Archie dropped it off this morning. And then Jughead reveals that Betty got him a vintage typewriter. And FP's like, ooh, you should go thank her in person. And Jughead's like, no, I think I'll just call or text her. Then Jughead got Betty a signed first edition copy of Beloved.
Beloved,
sorry. I wrote that down wrong. It's the Toni Morrison book.
Is it spelled the same way? Can you say it either way? Well, I know it's Beloved because it's like a character's name in the, or, yeah.
Yeah, it's Beloved. That's the book title. And now that you said that, I was like, yeah, that's right. But I think Beloved and Beloved are spelled the same.
Yeah, they would be. Yeah.
Anyways. Then Archie, it's revealed that Archie got Veronica a heart-shaped locket with a photo of both of them in it. So one side is Archie, one side is Veronica, which is just very cute. Archie talks to his mom on the phone and then gives it to Fred, and he gets a text from Veronica telling him to meet her outside. So he does. Where she hung up a mistletoe, they kiss. Veronica says that he's good and she needs goodness in her life, so she needs him. And she says that she loves him, so they kiss, and it starts to snow. But someone is taking photos of them from across the street.
I have no idea what the fuck this is. Do you know?
So I was like, this is giving a person who comes back in, like, four seasons?
Yeah, that's the meeting where I thought, I'm like, this is not that.
Anyway, this is not that.
It's going to be so exciting because I literally don't know what's coming next.
I don't remember what this is about.
Speaking of what's coming next, then we see the final scene is Betty basically burning all the stuff she got from the Black Hood, like the letters, the actual like Black Hood she tries to burn, but then it like doesn't burn. So she takes it back. And the Jughead voiceover is talking about how Betty stared into the blackest of voids when she was like working against / alongside the Black Hood, and that she learned some deep dark truths, and the truth whispered to her that this isn't over.
Dun dun dun.
Who's scared?
Me.
This was a really entertaining episode.
It really was. Not much in the way of, like, quotes, but plot-wise, it was strong. It started off a little weak, in my opinion, but it got there in the end.
Yes, yes. It had to lay some groundwork. I like that during the very intense points of, like, Archie and Betty finally solving this mystery, like, Jughead skinning a woman and Veronica, like, finally finding out the truth about her family, Cheryl's plotline is just like, Mom, get a job. Like, I'm trying to save Christmas.
Cheryl's plotline in this episode is great, especially considering how awful her plotlines have been the past few episodes.
Yeah, honestly, this is a likable Cheryl, even though she, like, actively tried to stop them from saving, like, a potential murder victim. She was, like, she was still better than usual.
Yes, she was. Okay. What is your outfit of the episode?
I'm going with Cheryl's outfit number one with the black witch sleeves and the perfect Christmas belt.
I'm not gonna lie. Archie's sweater. It's Archie's sweater for me. It's so rare to get a male fashion sleigh, and I do love a sweater. So I was
He looks so good in it. Like, and you would think it looks weird because he has like neon orange hair and orange and red don't look good together, but it just worked.
It worked somehow.
My quote of the episode was Hermione saying, "Since when are you a communist?"
Mine is also Hermione. But mine is let me share two words to live by: plausible deniability.
So true, Queen.
She's so real for that one.
That them saying like we're not doing anything illegal either has like he's saying I'm more innocent than guilty energy.
It really does.
Like, why are they fighting? They should be in love. Serpent should team up with the lodges.
Yeah, they should.
Anything else about this episode?
No, I don't have anything. What about you?
No, I don't think so. Very chaotic, very entertaining. Who should we do for Kinsey Scale?
Have we done Svensson yet? This is his last episode.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Time to do him because he dies. So we are doing Kinsey Scale, which is the heterosexuality to homosexuality scale from 0 to 6. We are doing Mr. Svensson / Joseph Conway / the Black Hood, ? No. I really do not know. Okay, no. I think I know. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Okay. We have similar answers. Allison said 4 and I said 3. So, Allison, explain.
Well, first, just when we get something that similar for like the most minor of characters, I'm like, insane. We need to know.
We are.
I will say, Mr. Svensson, he had some energy of just like something about being like a sad boy, just like screams kind of gay to me, because he was clearly like a sad child. And then at the Sisters of Quiet Mercy, a known homophobic institution, they were like, oh, he was so troubled. Like, I don't know. I just, and even him as an adult, like he was presumably single, which like kind of makes sense if you've like experienced that kind of family tragedy. Maybe you don't want to get married, but it also seems like slightly gay to be like older and unmarried. So.
Oh, that was where my point too. I was like, he's just like a little gay. Like he's older, he's unmarried. In Riverdale, that makes sense. For like, that's just kind of gay. Cause like Riverdale definitely seems like a town where if you're not married by like 24, they're like, oh, old maiden.
Damn.
And he's like an older dude who's not married and never has been. Tragic backstory, sadness, depression. I don't know, it's just all kind of give and gay.
Yeah.
Also, his like weird supportive Josie is just, it has the energy of like gay. I don't know.
True. He was like, he was standing like the future Beyonce.
He was standing the next Whitney Houston.
Gay. Right.
Because like it wasn't creepy and sexual like at all, which if he was like a straight older guy, it definitely would have been.
Yes. And he was such an ally too. Like when he accidentally walked in on Cheryl and Josie in the locker room last episode, he was like, I'm so sorry. And like obviously Cheryl took it the wrong way, but like he was actually very sorry. So, you know, ally. Anyway, okay. I guess he slayed. Anything else?
Then he got slayed, but like, oops.
He got slayed. Slaying, being murdered. Is that gay? Being a murderer, is that gay? Almost shooting Archie in the head. Gay.
No. I don't know. That's all a little. The violence. See, the violent part is why he's a 3 and not like higher to me.
Okay.
Is being a serial killer, that's some straight shit.
Yeah. Very true. All right, folks. Well, have a good When will this episode air? In 2 weeks? But 4th of July.
What? Have fun. Have a nice day. Thanks for listening.
God bless.
You can reach out to us. Let us know what your thoughts are on the episode. We'd love to hear from you. Hear what your favorite iconic fits of the episode or your favorite quotes of the episode are. You can reach out to us at cherylsbwords@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at cherylsbitches, or find us on Instagram at cherylsbitches and TikTok at cherylsbitches as well. So that is cherylsbwords@gmail.com if you want to send us an email, and cherylsbitches on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Check us out, please.